KALW.
There's a long history that includes the tribal ancestors, and more recently, those Western settlers. Now, our Burning Man community is included in that.
Burning Man is known for a lot of things: the art, the parties, the wooden man that's set ablaze every year. But most participants don't know much about the land's original inhabitants.
The Paiute people have been in this area for thousands and thousands of years.
Most years, people drive right through the Pyramid Lake Paiute Reservation to get to Burning Man.
The festival itself is amazing. People bring problems.
Burning Man is going virtual this year, and we're running all new episodes of The Intersection at Burning Man this week. Today, we explore where the past meets the present. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're bringing you a story from The Intersection at Burning Man. Every year, in normal years, that is, thousands of people trek to Black Rock Desert in Nevada for Burning Man. But most don't know about the history of the land or the people who were its original inhabitants.
So first, I would like to introduce where we are. We are on indigenous-occupied land that is transformed temporarily into Burning Man.
Reporter Lucy Kang wanted to learn more about the history of the land. This is what she found.
Think of the greeter station as the official welcome wagon of Burning Man.
Tell me a little bit about what we're doing out here.
We're greeting. We are the first ritual that people run into when they come into Burning Man.
Anna, what does part of the ritual include?
It includes having them set an intention, jumping across the line and getting a little dirty in the dust, and then ringing a bell and announcing themselves to the city.
It's a ceremony to initiate first-timers, or virgins as they're called. I rang the bell myself for the first time in 2006, but the reason I'm out here today is to find a very specific group of burners, members of the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe. Black Rock City is built on the ancestral territory of the Northern Paiute people, the Numu, and their direct descendants are still here, grouped among different bands and tribes, like the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe. If you've ever driven to Burning Man from Reno, you've probably passed through their reservation, 50 miles south of here. Burning Man gives several hundred free entry passes for tribe members to attend, so I know they're out here. But how do you find a group of a few hundred people in a city of 80,000? And so I'm standing at the greeter station, holding a handmade sign with the words "Interviewing Paiute Tribe Members" scrawled in marker. It's slow going. I'm about to give up on my mission when a pickup truck pulls up. A man in a red baseball cap hops out and looks in my direction. Before I know it, I'm meeting his wife.
I'm Cassandra Davis. I am from the Fallon Paiute Shoshone tribe. And I am married to Andrew Davis from Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe.
He's also known as
Black Owl, Mr. AKA, still your girlfriend.
I toss my bicycle into the back and hop into the truck. Cassandra is behind the wheel. Black Owl is riding shotgun.
One more street up.
All right. So we kind of tell people, you know, when we're out here, like, yeah, we're part of the tribe here, you know, like. And
I'll tell people straight up, man. I'm from Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe, boy.
And this actually used to be part of the Pyramid Lake.
This used to be the dry lake bed that was Pyramid Lake. That's why we get wristbands.
Those are the free passes that the Burning Man organization gives to members of the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe as a sign of goodwill.
Is this place that we're on now considered like part of ancestral Paiute like territory?
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
All of this is. All of it. This is all sacred land.
Cassandra and Black Owl are locals, and when Burning Man comes to town, it's a family affair.
Between me and my husband, we have 8 kids, and our kids love Burning Man. They think it's probably one of the funnest places on earth.
Their kids haven't been, but
they look forward to all the traffic and all the burners coming through. They get excited seeing all the different art carts, you know. They'll stop and take pictures, and they help us with our bikes. They'll put the lights on and help decorate our backpacks and, you know, just kind of get into the spirit of Burning Man. It's really fun.
Black Owl and Cassandra have been coming to this event for a long time.
And what year is this for you at Burning Man?
22.
Do you consider yourself a burner?
No.
Do you consider yourself a burner?
I do. I'm a burner. I'm a 5 local. Years in. Yeah, we're locals, but it's more of a heart thing, you know? Like, you feel it in your heart, you know, when you come out here, just, you know, being home, pretty much. We're still local. We still have our jobs to go to. We still have to go to work every day and provide for our families, you know, and that I know a lot of people feel like this is their home.
In fact, welcome home is how a lot of burners greet each other.
But, you know, at the end of the day, they go home, or at the end of the week, they go home, and we're still here.
Underneath Black Rock City is Black Rock Playa, an ancient lake bed that's one of the largest and flattest places on Earth. There are some areas here that are still sacred to the Northern Paiute people.
You can see it from the playa. You can see the sacred places that we still use.
That's Dean Barlice. Dean is a Pyramid Lake Paiute elder with a lot of spiritual and cultural knowledge. In fact, he's on the tribe's cultural committee. Right now, he's sitting in a Burning Man camp, answering questions from camp members.
People think we're gone just because we're on the reservation, but we still come out here and make offerings in a lot of our sacred places that very few people know about, but we do. I do, anyway.
Dean says that his ancestors are buried in the mountains around Black Rock Playa. Dean's been going to Burning Man since 2001. He says he enjoys it. And he blesses the Burning Man Temple every year at the request of the temple volunteers. After the throngs of burners have left, Dean comes back to bless the playa to clear it of any negative energy burners may have left behind.
We're still caretakers, no matter what anybody says, no matter what the laws say, we're still caretakers. That has not been taken away from us by Creator.
I wanted to learn more about what Dean means when he talks about the tribe's relationship with the land. So, in December, months after Burning Man, I drive to the Pyramid Lake Paiute Reservation. I take the route many burners take, north on Highway 447. The landscape here is high desert, with shrubs everywhere, the type of place where tumbleweeds blow in the wind. This is the largest Native American reservation in Nevada. About a quarter of it is taken up by Pyramid Lake's 200 square miles of blue water. From the road, there's not much that marks the reservation, except the occasional sign on the highway. I drive into Nixon, one of three towns on the reservation. I pass by what look like working ranches and single-family homes. Some have resting cars and trailers parked outside. One of the most distinctive buildings in Nixon has a triangular roof. It's meant to evoke the pyramid rock formation that Pyramid Lake is named for. I'm here to talk to Billie Jean Guerrero.
I'm the museum director for the Pyramid Lake Museum and Visitor Center located in Nixon, Nevada. We are the only tribal museum in the state of Nevada.
To really understand the tribe's relationship with the Burning Man event, you need to understand a longer span of history.
The Paiute people have been in this area for thousands and thousands of years. We have petroglyphs in our area that are known as the oldest in North America, and they are dated 14,800 years old.
The original territory of the nomadic Northern Paiute people spanned Nevada, California, Oregon, and Idaho. They lived here for generations and lived off the land. They gathered piñon pine nuts and hunted antelope and deer. The band that would eventually be called the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe was known for eating the kiwi fish, which was found only in Pyramid Lake. They roamed over the vast territory. Everything changed for them in the mid-1800s.
Perhaps you have heard of Sweet Betsy from Pike, who crossed Rocky Mountains to lover's delight.
The discovery of gold and silver in California and Nevada sent thousands of white settlers onto Paiute land. The mines built immense wealth for the white settlers, but they decimated the traditional ways of life. The settlers took water, grazing land, and food sources, all scarce in the desert to begin with, many Paiutes starved to death. Armed conflict broke out. Wars were fought, and then mostly lost because the settlers were backed by the full force of the United States military. Fighting also took place in the Black Rock Desert. Local historian Sessions Wheeler called these battles a war that, in respect to its ferocity, probably had no equal in Nevada history. By the end of the century, the Paiute people had been pushed off of 95% of their territory. Most of the land was taken by the federal government or white settlers and homesteaders. Some was carved into reservations, like the Pyramid Lake Paiute Reservation, where I am now.
And it basically was a prison camp because people could no longer go off the reservation to hunt and gather as they survived in the past.
And then the federal government developed a policy known informally as kill the Indian, spare the man. They forced Native American communities to assimilate into white society.
And one of the ways to assimilate was through boarding schools, which was to beat the Indian out of a person.
Stewart Indian School was one such boarding school in Carson City, Nevada, that children from nearby tribes were sent to.
Basically, children would be kidnapped from the reservations and taken to Stewart Indian School, sometimes as early as 5 years old, and parents not knowing where they were. It was a very traumatic experience.
Schools like this tried to completely wipe out Native cultures and languages.
They had to forget about the Indian ways and adopt the white man's ways. And if they didn't follow that program, they would be beaten. Sometimes they would be killed.
The U.S. government didn't end the policy of assimilation until 1934, not long after the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe gained federal recognition. Tribal elder Dean Barlice sums up this history.
They tried to destroy us, annihilate us, waging wars of genocide against us. We're still here.
Native communities are still dealing with the aftermath of policies enacted by our government.
And those events cause trauma, which is long-lasting. So trauma is carries over and is known to be generational, so it carries over from one generation to the next. And if there's no healing that happens, then it just keeps on going.
Ultimately, the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe was never completely displaced from its ancestral homelands. But they lost most of the land their ancestors used to roam and forage, including places like the Black Rock Desert. That land is now owned by the U.S. government and overseen by the Bureau of Land Management. It is also home to Burning Man.
I think it's really important to appreciate, if you're on Playa and you're at Burning Man, that there's a lot of people who have been there before you, and we're just the most recent visitors.
That's Marnie Benson from the Burning Man Project. She works year-round to coordinate with the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe.
We recognize that there's a long history that includes the tribal ancestors and more recently those Western settlers. And now our Burning Man community is included in that. The Burning Man Project's relationship goes back as far as 1990 when Burning Man first went to the Black Rock Desert.
Those first burners, about 90 in total, didn't have a permit from the Bureau of Land Management. Rumors circulated among locals that hippie Satanists had flocked to the desert. From a small group on the playa, Burning Man has grown to a city of tens of thousands. From a gathering on the fringes of society, it became first a corporation and now a nonprofit with gross receipts of nearly $48 million in 2019. Its impact on the tribe has grown too. And that's where Marnie comes in. Her official title is Director of Government Affairs for Burning Man. She deals with the whole alphabet soup of federal, state, and local agencies, as well as the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe.
So a lot of people don't realize that the reservation is a sovereign nation with its own rules and laws.
Yeah, people need to understand that we are a nation within a nation.
That's Tribal Chairman Anthony Sampson and Water Quality Manager Cameron Morgan. To be clear, they are the only two people in the story authorized to speak officially on behalf of the tribe. The Burning Man Project signs a contract every year to reimburse the tribe for services like police, trash, and emergency response.
How much power does the tribe have in terms of like negotiation with the contract?
I think it's 50-50. We throw out what we're looking at and what our needs are, and they'll come back with what they can, you know, help the tribe with. I think it's somewhat off balance, but I believe that, you know, as this year we sat down with Burning Man, they were more open.
And you, when you say off balance, do you mean in favor of Burning Man slightly?
That would be, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
1,500 people live on the reservation. 80,000 go to Burning Man. And the median household income of burners was over $100,000 in 2018, more than 2.5 times the median household income on the reservation. So it's not surprising that Burning Man has a lot of negotiating power and impact. Locals like Black Owl can have deep ties to Burning Man, but they see what most burners don't, the costs that are externalized onto their communities and onto people who are often just trying to go on with their daily lives.
The festival itself is amazing. People bring problems.
Cassandra brings up two common concerns.
The impact it has on the environment is number one. You know, the trash. People are courteous enough to clean up the playa because that's the rules. But on the way out and on the way in, it's more of an issue negatively because of all the trash that's, you know, falls off the trailers. People leave behind when they pull over on the sides of the roads.
Burning Man cleanup crews do come after the event to pick up trash on the state roads on the reservation, though trash can sometimes blow away before they get to it. The second problem is traffic. Almost every local I talk to has a horror story about reckless drivers. Burning Man and its community does try to give back in various ways. There are volunteer workdays on the reservation and a donation of solar panels a few years back. And then there's the cash.
We have, as an organization, made donations to the tribe for many, many, many years. So Senior Center, the Fire Rescue EMS Department, and the museum. It's several thousand dollars.
Burners also bump up the local economy while they're here.
You burners out there, stop by our convenience stores and the vendors out there. It, it helps boost their economy for our tribal membership and even our tax revenue on the reservation.
Some families on the reservation rely on roadside vending to make ends meet. Every year at Burning Man, the highway to Black Rock Desert is dotted with food trucks, trash hauling services, and stands hawking blinky lights. Bunny's Tacos was one of the earliest Indian taco stands. If you don't know what an Indian taco is, here's Bunny.
Bunny's Taco Stand started with a taco bread made from Grandma's kitchen. Beans, lettuce, tomato, cheese, salsa made homemade from Bunny's little kitchen. All homemade.
Bunny's Tacos is run out of a trailer that sits next to Maureen Poncho's house in Nixon. Bunny is Maureen's grandmother, but Maureen calls her mom. The family has been selling Indian tacos during Burning Man for 2 decades. Maureen started helping out when she was just a kid.
I'll say about 10 years ago, Burning Man was just nonstop traffic. Everybody wanted a stand. It's everybody's extra income during that time. So everybody's popping up stands, whether it's food, crafts, anything, because there's barely any jobs for those that don't have one, and that's how they can make their money.
Historically, unemployment here was more than double the state average. And Maureen says the Burning Man business just hasn't been as good for a couple of years. Some think the drop in traffic might be due to the rise in more direct transportation, like the Burner Express bus or private flights. Yes, Burning Man has an airport. Whatever the reason for the slowdown, Maureen is feeling the effects.
Back in the day, I was looking at least $5,000 to $6,000. Now, honestly, I'm not even. I'm at a, we'll say at a minimum wage of a week's worth. You're barely making anything now. And we count on Burning Man every year.
Aside from the organization, there's one group of burners currently addressing the poverty here, the queer camp Comfort and Joy. They run a food drive every year. People leaving Black Rock City can drop off extra food at Bunny's Tacos. Then Maureen helps distribute it to the many, many households who rely on the food bank.
We have gotten over, I want to say roughly 8 truckloads of food. We fed over 150 families. And it varied from cans to fresh vegetables to eggs. Everything was gone within 3 days.
Comfort and Joy also holds a separate fundraiser. Last year, it raised around $14,000 for the Tribal Food Bank. It's doing one this year as well. Fabian Justice, known on the playa as Biscuits, runs the fundraisers. He says he wants burners to be more aware of the tribe.
You're not just driving through on State Route Nevada 447 heading to Black Rock City. You're going through the land that has belonged to somebody for way longer than the United States has ever been here, and that there's a sacredness to it.
Do you think that, like, burners have, I guess, like, a moral responsibility to redistribute some of this, like wealth and resource privilege?
I absolutely do. Just as fundamentally, just as human beings, we have a moral responsibility to help one another. But obviously that's even compounded when we're coming here to have this crazy celebration on their sacred land, and we do have a moral responsibility. Absolutely.
Whether it's a net positive or not, Burning Man and the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe are connected by the road, by the money, by the people, and by the land that Black Rock City is built on. Many talk about the Black Rock Playa as a blank slate, but that's not the whole story. Burning Man exists on top of a larger history. It's built every year on land taken from the Northern Paiute people. The poverty on the reservation is just one legacy of their history. Meanwhile, last year alone, the Burning Man Project paid more than $4 million to the federal government for services and permits to use this land. Burning Man may be a playground for the imagination, but that doesn't free it from its place in history, or the history of this place. On Paiute land, I'm Lucy King for Cross Currents.
You can find a link to Comfort and Joy's fundraiser for the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe on our website. Kaiva Wado Saugamian and Weather Song from the album Circle Dance Songs of the Paiute and Shoshone are by Judy Trejo and courtesy of Canyon Records. Sweet Betsy from Pike was performed by Zelmer Ward and Vester Whitworth. Special thanks to the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe Museum and Visitor Center. This story was a co-production of KELW and KPFA. Tune in for another episode tomorrow at 5. We'll explore why only 1% of people who go to Burning Man are Black and what some burners are doing to change that.
Black Rock City! Black Lives Matter at Black Rock City! Black Lives Matter!
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. Today's team includes Noor Bouzidi, Julia Linus Goodman, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Joshua Sorodiak. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.